This episode of We Are Libertarians is brought to you by Audible.com. Enjoy one free audiobook courtesy of We Are Libertarians. Choose from more than 100,000 audiobook titles, including works by Ron Paul, Walter Block, Murray Rothbard, and the Cato Institute. Audible.com also has audio of radio and TV programs and audio versions of magazines and newspapers. You can get the Audible app on any mobile device or download the audio to your computer. Go to audibletrial.com/WAL or head to WeAreLibertarians.com and find the link to get one free month of Audible today. Welcome to We Are Libertarians for this week. I'm your host, Chris Spangle. Across from the table is Greg Lenz. As always, Greg, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, Chris. How are you?
I'm good. The recorder is rolling. It's much like the old days where we have lots of technical snafus. You'd think after roughly 10 years I'd get the hang of this radio thing, but to no avail. And the reason I bring that up is my former boss, my mentor, a man who was at my wedding, in my wedding, because he said I needed a black guy in the wedding.
It wasn't from the army.
Abdul Hakim Shabazz, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. Happy to be here.
Yeah.
I was happy to get the invitation.
Yeah.
And other than trekking to the south side of Indianapolis, I feel like I'm in Kentucky.
It's below 70, which is not normally where you would like to go.
Well, temperature-wise, I'm more of a 55 in rain. You know me, you know, getting me south of Marist South Street is kind of like, how'd you do that?
So Abdul was the longtime host of Abdul in the Morning on WXNT, rest in peace, here in Indianapolis. And I was an intern in 2004 for six months, and he tortured me, and I broke lots of things, and Andrew Lee, for some inexplicable reason, let a person who had never run the board run the board.
Because you couldn't do a worse job than the people who had experience who ran the board.
And then I was there for about 4 years. My final year, I was Abdul's producer, and did a little reporting, and constantly gave him agita, and he would constantly look at me and say, "How are you still alive?
Yes, how do you function?"
Because I was roughly 22, 23, and a total idiot.
As opposed to, how old are you now?
I'm 31.
Yeah.
And I'm just, I'm upgraded to a moron now. I'm just sort of a moron. So it is, I'm taking a big risk here on the show. As you know, this is, I have a very well-cultivated image here on the show of Dear Leader.
Yes.
That I am the ruler with an iron fist in the show, and I have just let in the one person.
You're supposed to bury your past.
Who has done nothing but bust my balls like my older brother for 10 years.
Well, although, isn't he the reason you're no longer a Limbaugh Republican?
Oh, for sure, yeah.
I did you a favor.
Yeah, I if you actually go to wal-radio.com, you'll find WXNT's Ghost, and there's some podcasts of Abdul and I. There's the Chris Spangle Show on wearelibertarians.com, and there's some old episodes of my time at WXNT, including my very first radio show in that feed.
That's right, because we gave you the show, let's do a Saturday show,
right,
at noon for an hour.
Yeah, Rob Green and I and Jason Neeland, I think it was, did the show for an hour, and I expected it to be horrendous, and it was actually better than this show. It was much better. 119 episodes in.
Wow, how the mighty have fallen and can't get up.
Yeah, you guys gave me an hour as a thank you, and mostly it was just because you and Andrew wanted to see how bad I would do.
Yeah, pretty much. We're setting you up for failure.
Yeah. So check those out, and check out the Jeff Vibbert podcast I was most recently on, and that's getting, of course, rave reviews. But no, Abdul has been like my older brother for many, many years, my brother from another mother.
Older brother who's black and good looking.
And Muslim.
Yeah. Agnostic, because I like bacon, scotch,
right,
and cigars.
He's Muslim, like...
he just ate bacon, so it's definitely not Ramadan for him.
He's Muslim, like Greg is Christian.
Yeah.
So
don't take it too seriously.
In the Caitlyn Jenner way.
Right.
Just kind of be nice to everybody, mind your own business.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, I feel like those are universals. I don't want to put a name on it.
Right. Yeah, moral flex, you know.
It's called common sense.
Right. Yeah. And so you left WXNT, and you do what now?
I left WXNT in August of 2011. Matter of fact, it was about a week after I came back from dealing with a legal case in Illinois, because I'm also a lawyer, and got the call, like, "Hey, we're canceling the show." And it was funny because it was a Wednesday when they were, when I got the word that they were canceling the program. I was like, okay, well, you know, it's radio.
It happens. I mean, was it eight years?
Yeah, almost 8 year run. I mean,
which is unheard of in radio.
Unheard of in radio. You know, I was technically one of the longest running morning shows in Indianapolis at that time. And so, but WXNT was, they were really cool about it because it wasn't them. It was just a Bean Counters decision in the Philadelphia suburbs. So,
right.
So I left, and it was kind of funny because I lost one job, and I had like three more jobs within like a week.
All radio?
No. teaching and doing some other things.
Jobs that paid money, Greg.
Yeah. Teaching and doing some other stuff. And I started my political weblog, indypolitics.org, which something I always kind of want to do is make like a Politico for Indianapolis. And you know, 4 years later, it's still going strong. And in the process, I created this whole thing called the Cheat Sheet. It is a political gossip column that you pay whatever I feel like charging you at the time. You buy it. It has all the inside scoop and gossip and rumor. And all the politicals in Indianapolis read it.
Yeah.
When the governor of Indiana told me one day, I have to read your cheat sheet so I know who's leaving my administration. So.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Mitch?
Mitch and Mike.
Yeah.
Wow.
No, it is for the longest time. So this guy comes in, and I had been around politics locally for 2 or 3 years. You know, I'd followed it. I was always a political nerd. I was in the College Republicans in 2004, and I got involved in the political scene. And then Abdul comes to town, and he got here in September of 2004. I started interning in December, and Andrew was from Florida. He was the producer, and he was fairly new, too, because it was sort of a new station. It was a new setup. And I was actually like, oh, here's who you need to talk to, Abdul. I was giving him all the scoop. I was like, you got to go to the Hobnob. That's like the event of the year. You got to go. You'll love it. And within like 2 months, he already knew everybody. He knew everything. And I was, you know, showing my ass. But Abdul has really made himself, how do I phrase this?
An established fixture in Indiana politics.
Yes.
An infiltrator?
The man who can get things done for you if you have a problem. He is a member of the establishment.
And proud of it.
Not one of us plebes. So we wanted to have Abdul on to talk a little bit about how politics actually works. Abdul is a lawyer. He grew up in the Chicago machine, worked in Illinois. You were the press guy for...
The Illinois Attorney General. One of the politicians in Illinois who did not go to prison.
Right. And didn't you work for the Jerry Ryan's husband? Was it a different Ryan?
I did not work for Jerry Ryan. The guy, his name was Jack Ryan. Here's a story, which your audience will appreciate it, because this was, after I'm done telling this, it will totally reek of a Forrest Gump type moment. When I did talk radio in Springfield, Illinois, WMAY radio, I did the morning show, and my politics were more right of center, kind of like they are now. And there was the U.S. Senate race between a guy named Jack Ryan. He was a financier, broker, started a charter school for African-American kids, investment banker, good profile, not crazy, the kind of person that you'd want to win your primary and run. And he ran against this other guy who was a state senator named Barack Obama.
Wow.
I feel like Emile Jones is going to come into...
Yeah.
Eventually. So Barack Obama and Jack Ryan, they both won their party's nominations, and so they're just kind of going through the motions. And then a story breaks in late midsummer that Jack Ryan had some weird things in his past with respect to his divorce, because he was married to Jerry Ryan, a.k.a. Seven of Nine of Star Trek Voyager. And so there was some stuff in his divorce records that it wasn't very flattering. I mean, there was nothing illegal, it just wasn't flattering, like to take his wife to sex clubs and do things in front of people, hey. At least not slipping her a roofie, I mean. So, Jack Ryan. So one day I ran into Jack Ryan at the Illinois State Fairgrounds, because at the fairgrounds they have Democrat Day and Republican Day, where all the politicians show up and do whatever politicians do. And so I said, "Hey, Jack, you got a second?" He's like, "Sure, come here. I need to talk to you for a second. The stuff, whatever's in your divorce records, I would say get in front of it and get in front of it now. I mean, granted, you got your 12-year-old son, and you know we want to expose your kids to all that. But my advice to you." Is just say, hey, my divorce records are going to come out. I'm going to release them. There's some stuff in there that my wife accused me of, that a few things I'm not proud of. But at the end of the day, You also have to remember that the courts heard testimony, they heard my wife, they heard from me, and they gave me custody of our 12-year-old son because they trusted me to raise him the right way now.
Right.
There you go. That's all he should have said, and but he didn't. They fought it. They got released. All the sex club stuff came out. He had to drop out of the U.S. Senate race. Alan Key stepped in.
Oh, God.
You know, which we call a crazy-ass Negro.
I've never heard that.
Well, you don't hang around a lot of black people. So, when that happens, he drops out. Alan Keyes gets in. Barack Obama wins the U.S. Senate race. 4 years later, he runs for president. And here we are today. So, in a very Forrest Gump-esque sort of way, I think I see some lights on in that building over there. Y'all may want to go check it out.
Did you really just take credit for Barack Obama getting elected president?
Responsibility.
Responsibility.
Because of me.
Well, now we know whose ass to whoop.
Yep. Why, thank you. Why, thank you, Mr. Spangle.
Now, listen.
I didn't know this was Django and Crash. I'm feeling really uncomfortable here.
You know, that's... I wish you wouldn't do that. We have a member of the cast who is black, and someone knocked on the door one night, and I just looked at the first person that I saw sitting across the table and said, "Can you get the door?" Turned out to be Harry, the black guy. And I've never lived that down.
Get the door, Harry. Why aren't you getting the door? That door's not going to open itself.
Ah, well, at least his name wasn't Benson.
Exactly right. So you identify politically as what?
My politics are right of center. I would say on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being the tree-hugging, Birkenstock-eating, you know, granola, Birkenstock-wearing, granola-eating, liberal tax and spin, Obamacare-loving hippie. Scale of 10 being the meat-eating, cigar-smoking, baby-soul-clubbing, jack-booted, corporate fascist, 1% or pig, I'd probably be about a 7, 7.5.
Would you say that you have libertarian streaks within you?
Well, not since I changed my underwear. Well, yeah. I mean, yeah, I mean, I have a on social issues, I have a very libertarian bent. I've always been a firm believer that if it doesn't infringe, kind of like the old Thomas Jefferson line, I think it was, if it doesn't infringe on my personal property or my liberty, or cost me money, I really don't care.
Right.
And that's kind of the rule I live by. Like, are you costing me money? No. Are you on my property? No. You're a friend of hers? No. Then okay, why are you telling me this?
So taking my time.
Right. So Abdul got a hold of me at a time when I was disillusioned.
Hanatized.
In 2004, I worked for Bush, and I worked for Andy Horning and Mitch Daniels, and some of these other Republicans. I had been a Republican my whole life. In 2003, I had a pro-war rally. It was basically a support the troops rally, but we kicked the anti-war protesters off because...
Later turns out they were right.
Yeah.
They hated our freedom, too.
Yeah, so we all do things in college we're not proud of. Some of you had premarital sex. I was a Republican.
None of us have premarital sex with Republicans.
Now, it's not like I wasn't trying, okay? It's just that I wasn't good with women then. I really was full of Republican indoctrination when I started interning in 2004 and started arguing with Abdul over the years, and I really couldn't argue his points with my points because all I knew was what Rush Limbaugh told me. And so he kind of shook my foundations and made me go...
Well, for example, one of the things I remember early on, we had a conversation about Julia Carson.
Right.
Because for Republicans, Julia Carson was the devil, and they couldn't... She was a former congresswoman on the 7th Congressional District, which is, for the most part, was Indianapolis. Republicans couldn't understand how Julia Carson kept winning elections, and like she doesn't believe in this, she's for taxes, and blah, 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 and look at her public policy position, but what they couldn't get... was Julia Carson was not that kind of politician. Julia Carson was a constituency service politician.
Yeah.
If somebody in your family died and you lived in her district, they read the obituary pages and they sent flowers. Mm-hmm. Somebody couldn't find grandma's Social Security check, Miss Carson.
Yep.
She went and
hand-delivered it.
She hand-delivered it for grandma. When the Children's Museum needed money, Miss Carson, she went and got it.
Yep.
And Republicans just could not understand that for the life of them because... like Tip O'Neill said, all politics is local. And you got to look at the people in the area that you serve, and then that gives you an idea of who's in charge.
Yeah, and Julia Carson was the center township trustee. And in Indiana, we have township trustees, so we have 92 counties. Ridiculous. And they're all broken down into 9 townships. and each one has a trustee, and that is the form of welfare that was set up in the beginning, you know, in the 1860s. And basically, if you can't pay your light bill, or if your kids need school clothes, or if, you know, one hardship or another, a temporary hardship.
Yeah, you go to the township office.
Right. And they'll pay your light bill for the month, you know, and they, you know, it's not a long-term thing, it's not a lifestyle, it's just a temporary assistance, which is why I don't have a terrible problem with it, but...
Well, it's community-oriented, which is, you know, so much different than every other public policy design that you hear brought up.
Yeah, and so in the 70s, she was the township trustee, and she was, you know, working with voters, helping them in times of crisis, and that really says a lot. That,
yeah, people remember that.
Yeah.
Miss Julia. Meeting your voters.
Yeah. Right. Miss Julia, she helped my mother. She helped my grandmother.
Yep.
Like, she spoke at my mom's funeral.
Like, don't you people watch Boardwalk Empire? There's a reason why they came around Christmas time giving turkeys to everybody. and yes, there is very little difference between organized crime and politics, except organized crime actually works.
And you gave me the book Plunkett of Tammany Hall. You autographed it. It's in the bookcase there for me. And I was like, Tammany Hall? Tammany Hall is the Irish machine of the
Boston, you know, or New York.
New York. So if you've watched The Gangs of New York, that's Tammany Hall. And Plunkett wrote this little simple book on how politics actually works. And like 100 and some years later, it's all actually how it works. And I just resisted and fought you. I was like, no, this is not how it should be. This is not how politics should be. It should be idealism and hope and
the West Wing.
And West Wing. And and it should be people powered and democracy. And every person should have a voice.
I was like, you're on crack. Where the hell are you from?
Now 10 years later, I'm a little bit more elitist and a little more enlightened.
Because people are stupid.
Right.
A person is smart. People are stupid. There's a difference.
Right.
That's why I always tell people, watch the movie Lincoln, and watch Tommy Lee Jones' character.
Oh.
It's like, no, son, when they're trying to get the votes for the 13th Amendment ratification, and they're chasing after the one guy, and he says, I want to be like some big hoity-toity whatever. And
Post Office General in Pennsylvania.
Yeah. And Tommy Lee Jones says, son, you don't want to be that. You want to be at the top of the tree. Top of the tree, you always got to sway back and forth like this. People are trying to cut you down. You want to be down here at the bottom, the foundation. That's where you want to be, low to the ground where the people are. That way they can see every day. It's like, oh, thank you.
I think libertarians a lot of times have this idealism that it should be about people. It should be the revolution and the grassroots movements.
And I should be less attractive and have a smaller penis. Unfortunately, neither one of those things is true, and neither one is going to happen unless I get in the shower and there's cold water.
Well...
I mean, no, the thing about politics, what people don't understand, is politics is basically, you know, the fundamental of the linking of the world through self-interest. And it's all about competing self-interest that keeps everybody honest. What do you need from me? What do I need from you? What do I need from you? What do we need from each other?
It's transactional.
Yeah, and how do we negotiate to make it happen? The old joke is democracy is four wolves and a lamb deciding what's for dinner, but the lamb has a machine gun.
Exactly.
And that's the way the world works. You know, it's about relationships. I mean ideology, you know, works to a degree and it's important, but at the same time, if you can't get stuff done, why are you here?
Right. So what I've come to find, I mean, libertarians are very idealistic, and we have a very this is the problem for libertarians, and this is something that I have struggled with for a long time, mostly going, okay, I have these lofty ideals and I have this goal of zero government. How do I make that happen? And then
it's called Somalia.
Okay.
Oh, God.
Oh, boy.
Uh-oh.
Would you like to take this? No. That is... let's stay on subject.
Okay.
So...
That's a terrorist breeding ground, and it offends me you think we're terrorists, too.
Nope. I just said, if you want to see what no government looks like, go to some place like Somalia.
But, yeah. They just have roving gangs, which are pretty close to government.
No, the thing is, the problem with the libertarian thing is, it's not about so much no government. It is, what is the proper role of government in both its size and its scope? Because here's newsflash. Small government can be just as annoying as big government.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So don't worse. Don't let the size of the government fool you. It's the scope of the government. And I think we can have a fair and straightforward, honest debate about what do we think government should do. I've always been a firm believer the job of government is to do for people what they can't do for themselves. You maintain the roads, the infrastructure, you do the national defense, and a few other things, and
Like court, courts. I mean, if you're a minarchist, you do the court system. Right. You know,
Yeah, you got to the courts. Yeah, we got to wait for dispute resolution, so we're not out in the street shooting each other.
Right.
So we're not Somalia.
Yeah.
Right. Which is minarchism. But so one of the things that we struggle with here is how do you give practical solutions? How do you give practical applications when you have these ideals of having something that is, you know, has really never actually been enacted in the history of man? How do we get to that point when we're dealing with the realities of politics?
Easy. One of the things is you always ask people, for example, you got to understand your audience, number one. You got in politics, you got to know who you're talking to. And what does your audience want? And at the end of the day, what do most people want? They want to be left alone.
Mm-hmm. Duh.
Right.
Ask anybody walking about it, hey, do you want the government telling you what to do? No. Do you want the government in your life? No. Do you want the government in your business? No. Do you want the government? No.
That's not going to affect my Medicare, though, is it?
Well, yeah. No, but see, but here's the thing. For the most part, most people want the government to leave them alone.
Right.
And so the trick is to sort of meet them where they are. You know, do people want the Medicare? Yeah. Do you want necessarily the government telling you every little pill you have to take five times a day? No. So the trick is, where do you find the balance? Where do you find the medium? Where a lot of libertarians get in trouble is like, okay, we want no fire departments. You should pay for your fire service. No, that's silly. Because guess what happens when that person next door doesn't pay for their fire service? Fire's going to spread.
Okay.
Yeah. No, that's the reality, is the negative externalities from us. Anytime you can have a freeloader in any kind of system you set up, all you're asking is for people to exploit the system and watch it collapse on itself.
If I may quote the Jesus Christ, the poor, the tax cheats, and the freeloaders will always be with you.
But you think so much. I question that if it's to be left alone economically, without doubt, and especially with regards to your property. But where I would question that is culturally, cultural change and issues like that. I feel like, given the baby boomers are such a big segment of our population, that they are resisting cultural change more so because they have so much voting power.
I wouldn't necessarily say because baby boomers. I said because they're older. I mean, the biggest block of voters have always been senior citizens.
No doubt, yeah.
Older people always will come out and always vote more than younger people do. I mean, the old joke was always, when I got my first job out of college, I called my dad one day. I went to the mall to go buy a television. I was like, hey, Dad, you know what? I went to buy a TV at Best Buy today. When those things get so expensive? Well, son, when you started paying for them.
Right.
Which is why, usually with people, the more money you make over time, the more kind of conservative you get with, trying to hold on to what's yours.
Yeah.
And then the thing about baby boomers is they came up, and you also have to understand, too, once again, this is knowing your audience, is baby boomers came from a time where government, they would argue, was a force for good and a force for social change. It was when the government, fought for the civil rights movement, voting rights movement, women's movement, etc. So their view of government is a lot different.
Yeah.
Somebody once asked Abdul, why do so many African Americans vote Democratic instead of Republican? It's like, well, you got to understand, when Republicans run around talking about states' rights and states' rights, well, my dad and my grandfather, states' rights means a whole different.
Yeah, when they see you posting left and right how you support the Confederate flag.
Yeah.
That's
Frank Underwood.
That's triggering.
I think what he say that even though I support states' rights, slavery is nothing to hit your winning position to. It's not worth it. And I think that couldn't be true.
That and you scratch my back and I won't stab you in yours.
Yeah. What is the
push you in front of a subcar?
Yes.
the man that Abdul most aspires to be is Frank Underwood. Okay, so to give you an idea of who we're dealing with now.
Without them making out with a Secret Service guy.
Yeah. So if you are a libertarian with lofty ideals, it's not that, I don't think that I've lost my idealism at all, or I've actually grown stronger and more solid in my libertarian beliefs, and to the point that I question minarchism, and I'm sort of...
You're climbing the purity scale.
Climbing the purity scale, yes. But at the same time, I'm still... I'm not engaged in politics as I was.
Well, the thing
I'm a retired country farmer now out on my ranch. Just telling the libertarians to leave me alone. I just want to play with
my
plums.
But people can't forget is you can't confuse tactics with policy. Those are two totally different things. I mean, if you're a strong libertarian and you believe in the libertarian principles, more freedom, limited government, to whatever point you want to do, fine. But you still got to play by the political rule book because you know what? It works because that's how people win.
Right.
And the whole point of politics is to get one more vote than the other guy.
Right. Yeah. And
small wins compounded over time.
Yep.
You know?
strategy is not a bad thing. It's necessary. So what advice do you have for a libertarian person that wants, let's say they're an issue-only activist. Let's say they have picked out an issue, and this is their issue, and they're going to lobby for it. What advice would you have for someone who their issue is Agenda 21? And they want to go lobby their legislator.
Okay, refresh my memory, because I live in this place called the real world.
Okay, that's exactly the reaction I was hoping for. Agenda 21 is the UN conspiracy that they are coming in, and they're passing all these agricultural referendi at all these local boards and at the legislature to allow the UN to slowly creep in and get one world government into place at local and state governments.
I recommend going to your nearest supermarket and picking up a couple boxes of Reynolds Wrap.
Tinfoil?
Yeah, to wrap around your head.
So, let's say foreskin. You want to protect the male foreskin and end male circumcision. That is your issue, and you come to the legislature.
If you want to end male circumcision, don't get married.
And so I guess the point that I'm driving at is that a lot of it is pick your issue, because when you go to the establishment types like Abdul, and you say, I want to end Agenda 21, and he goes, what are you talking about? Go get your tinfoil hat after you've explained it after 5 minutes.
Or if you tell me I want to get rid of Agenda 21, I was like, well, what about Agenda 20? I mean,
let's start at Agenda
1. Yeah.
Okay.
And go from there. I mean, kind of setting the skies are lofty goals there, Sparky.
So sometimes there is a disconnect between what libertarians, listeners of this program, want to change and what the political establishment will listen to and cares about.
And regular people, for that matter.
Right. So how do you reconcile that?
Well,
how did they reconcile that? Not you necessarily.
Stop talking crazy. Okay. Start talking about things that matter, things that are tangible that people can see. Somebody is more likely to get worked up. Hey, did you know that last year your government spent $8 million on, you know, little renewsits? Mm-hmm. What? Really? Yeah. Those renewsits cost the government $1,000 a pop. The renewsit that you could buy for like a dollar at Target? Yeah.
Right.
Oh my God, really? Yep. What else are they spending my money on?
Yeah, right. And they did it in bulk, which is even more impressive.
Yeah.
They were able to spend so much.
Yeah, and then they spent your money on this, and they spent money on this, and they spent money on this. I mean, you know, it's bread and butter, it's bricks and mortar stuff is
right.
What people see, feel, it's tangible. I mean, and Agenda 21, Area 51, you know, that's all fine and good if you're playing on Alex Jones's website and listen to all that, you know, New World Order, One World Government, you know, Council of Foreign Relations, Trilateral Commission, Illuminati, the devil.
So is it fair to say that your average legislator or a county commissioner or government official or bureaucrat that or media member that you're going to encounter that it runs around in the political establishment, the issues that they're going to care about are the things that most regular people write them and call them about?
Right.
And exactly. Keep them in power.
Yeah. I mean, it's bread and butter. It's bricks and mortar. I mean, and I'm sure, you know, somebody's all worked over some chemtrails somewhere. But.
Now, there's different classes of people. There's the normies. You know, on my Facebook, we've got the libertarians. We've got the trolls and the brutalists. And then we've got the libertarians who just kind of want to see what we're posting.
The curious libertarian.
Right. And then there's the normies, the people that I went to high school with that dare have a political opinion and then get attacked by the libertarians generally. So when you talk to a normie, not somebody who, you know, runs for office, has any desire for any political power, what do people most often bring up to you? What are the issues that most people care about that you have encountered over the last 10 years in talking to people?
Most people just want to wonder. There's not necessarily one issue, but why certain things happen. Why did they do this down there? Why do they vote for this? Most recently here in Indiana, why do they do that RFRA thing?
Yeah.
When the 60-year-old guy who works at the grocery store near the house, me and the wife, you know, comes to me and says, hey, because he watches me on channel television here, Mr. Abdul, what are they doing with that RFRA thing? Why are they trying to discriminate against people?
Yeah.
When I have people who are 40s, 50s, and 60s, white, middle, upper middle class, who do not live in Indianapolis but live in the surrounding area, which is the Donut County, which are traditionally more Republican. And they're all asking, why are they bringing up this religious freedom thing? This is stupid. This is a waste of time.
That's interesting. Yeah.
That's when you've got a problem, because those are your constituents that are supposed to be kind of voting for you.
Yeah.
Especially if you want to be president.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's fair to say that if you're a listener and you see what scrolls through and what your regular, normal Facebook friend, not what your libertarian friend posts, But what your aunt or what your high school friend post about politics, that would be kind of the conventional wisdom, and that might be where you want to start.
Yeah, or what you might want to do is one day go down to a local coffee shop or Starbucks, just sit in the corner and just kind of listen to what people talk about.
Yeah.
Because that's what's on the minds of average, everyday
people. So how do you get into the establishment? Asking for a friend.
Well, the way I did it was I just showed... Well, I have a job that kind of is kind of conducive to what I do for a living.
Right.
Because being on radio, being on television, writing a newspaper column and the political blogosphere, my job is to be around politicians and political figures all day long. It also helps that I used to work in politics.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been there on both sides of the fence. So I understand it from the media perspective and from the people who have to do the policy perspective. And so that kind of gives me the sort of the street cred. But it never hurts to just maybe if you find a political function, just go, check it out, see what's going on. And matter of fact, I know this may sound like an anathema to some people, but you know what? Take 20, 30 bucks. If you find a politician that you like, you know where a fundraiser is, just go spend the 20, 30 bucks and just hang out and pay attention.
Yeah.
And just use it. Think about it as just sort of a cover charge to go listen, go observe, see what people are talking about. You can play your cards. You don't have to necessarily give your opinion. Like, oh, I'm just new in town or whatever. I'm really interested in what you guys are doing. And don't just go to the Republican one. Go to the Democrat one.
Yeah.
And see what you can find out. And matter of fact, if Republicans and Democrats have a county party in your area, this may sound weird, sign up for them to get their emails. Because that'll tell you what's going on most of the time. But if I give them my email, they'll think I'm a Republican. I mean,
there's not someone cross-referencing and then banning you from the party if you sign up for
over 6,000 pages on Facebook. Nobody has ever accused me of being a Republican or a Democrat for liking Republican and Democrat. It's just you want to follow what they're doing on Facebook and see what they're up to.
I follow a woman here in Indiana named Monica Boyer.
Yeah.
She reminds me of, what was the movie, The Campaign? Not Will Ferrell, but the other guy.
Zach Galifianakis.
Yeah. His wife.
Oh, gosh, yes.
That's what she reminds me of, except not as attractive or pleasant to be around. But I follow her Facebook page because I think she's bat crap crazy. But I need to know what the bat crap crazies are doing.
Right.
This is why the NSA monitors terrorist chatter. Because you know what? You need to know when they're going to the grocery store.
You think the Indiana local Tea Party establishment is needed to be watched by the NSA?
Some of them, yeah, because they're crazy.
Not necessarily the NSA, just somebody. Aren't you a psychological professional?
Wasn't he
maybe
a founding member?
But it was a but that was a different type of tea party. I mean, that was one that was really about property taxes and spending before they went off on the deep end and got all Koch brothers, Freedom Works,
and centrally aligned.
Yeah.
And religious crazy.
Even Jesus would be like, "No, I don't know you people."
We will talk about what's wrong with the Republicans in a moment, but one thing that I would recommend actually, and we've talked a lot about this book lately, Greg and I, The 48 Laws of Power by Robert Greene. And one thing that I will tell you from my time in the establishment, it resembles the courts of the kings.
Bless you.
Thank you. Abdul, I would describe as a modern-day courtesan, somebody who is, moving within various circles of power, who is, using his wits and charm to get what he needs and exemplifies that book very well. So I would recommend really anything Robert Greene writes. But that book in particular, really, I identified most. That's probably the best political science book I've ever read.
I'm the guy who's basically my job is like, "Your Majesty, yes, Mr. Shabazz, duck."
Right.
Which I've had to do, as you've seen happen.
Thanks a lot for President Obama. I really appreciate it.
Sometimes you've been the one that's had to duck.
Yeah, or put my laptop in someone else's home for a while.
Have you gotten a lot of threats or real threats?
No, just one time the Marion County Sheriff's Department tried to serve a warrant on my house to try to get my laptop computer, and that wasn't going to happen.
Whoa.
So you remember when we were talking to Melissa Hubbard about 2007 and how crazy everything was?
Oh, yeah.
I see she left several copies of her book here.
She did, yes. If Melissa listens, I'm delivering those tomorrow, actually. During that period when I was with Abdul, there just was a lot of shenanigans and tomfoolery, and there were hijinks afoot. Some of them were... I don't want to say Abdul was up to anything. I don't think he was up to anything.
But I knew what was going on.
I wasn't, though. But, and we, Abdul was a talk radio show and the only news outlet that was focused on local politics and state politics. Nobody else does. Nobody else focuses on it. You heard the story, if you listen to the Melissa, about them not wanting to cover Ballard because he wouldn't spend ad dollars with Fox 59, the local Fox affiliate. You know, so Abdul kind of became a target in that period when politics got really kind of brutal. And it was a lot of fun.
Oh, those were the good old days.
Yeah.
Oh.
So if you just go to chrisspangle.com/podcasts and then go down to the WXNT folder and just pick anything from late 2007 and it's gold. Gold, Jerry. Gold. Now, what kind of shady things, what kind of awful, mysterious backroom deals are you establishment types lying and cheating? How are you ripping us off in the establishment?
Well, I would argue that lie and cheat is a matter of perspective.
Okay. All right. That's very flexible of you. A moral of flexibility. That's.
What is truth?
That glass exists. Don't look at that glass it doesn't exist.
You can't be sure.
Well, but if I were to fill this glass, I have a Chris Mangle, as we do this from your living room, dining room area. Let's say I fill this glass with half a glass of water. Is that glass half full or half empty?
That glass is half full.
Or is it half empty? Or is it half a glass? Truth is a matter of perspective.
Right.
Why is it that when four people see the same car accident, they have four different stories?
Right.
But it was all the same car accident.
Racism.
Sure.
Yeah. Well, that too. That's why black people don't do the Indy 500. We get pulled over. We'd never be able to finish.
Poor Willie T. Ribbs. He never could finish.
He never
race.
Could qualify. I mean, no. Truth is a matter of perspective. It is.
Yeah.
And no offense, but who writes the history? Winners. Guy who won.
Yep. So it's not necessarily that people are lying, cheating, and stealing if they're in the establishment. It's that people
are playing by the rule book.
Right. The rules that are written.
Yeah.
And just because you disagree with the rules, it doesn't mean that anything illegal or shady is going on.
Right. What you need to do is you need to get enough friends, get enough power, so you can write the rule book.
Right.
It's a golden rule. That's he who has the golden rules. Welcome to 2.5 million years of human history.
Right.
I mean, who was it? Go back to the movie 2001. Who was the head primate? The one to learn how to pick up a stick and knock the other troglodyte upside the head of the watering hole.
We'd like to think that we are really evolved, but we aren't, are we?
No, there's some big black monolith that everybody walks up and tries to touch, so yep. Don't touch me.
Evolutionary psychology is a great... I've been studying that a lot lately, and boy, are we a bunch of animals. If you're a libertarian candidate, what are some things that you've seen libertarian candidates do that are really good? And then we'll talk about the really bad. What are some things that Libertarian Party candidates?
I can appreciate the libertarians who are dedicated and who are willing to work. One of which is my good friend, who you know, Mark Rutherford.
Sure.
Mark Rutherford is a libertarian who gets the politics, who gets the process, who gets the procedure, and understand because you got to learn the rule book. You got to learn the rule book and you got to learn the playbook if you want to get involved in the game. And Mark is adamant about libertarians learning the rules, learning the rule book. Now, let's learn how the procedure works to get people on the ballot, so we can meet our deadlines, so we can run good, because what's the point of going out and recruiting candidates if you can't get them on the ballot because somebody didn't fill out the paperwork?
Or you have a moral objection to the paperwork, which has happened.
Well, you can have all the moral objections to the paperwork that you want. No, it still doesn't change anything.
Right. The paperwork shouldn't exist.
I agree. Now sign it.
Right. I had that argument.
And donate $100.
Oh, my God. I had that argument so many times. You sound like me for 4 years.
It's like this. Like the guy goes to the restaurant. No, the food here is terrible. Yeah, and the portions are so small. Okay, yes, we've established that. Now sign the paperwork.
Right.
I should have to pay property taxes. Well, you're right, but you do. Now pay them or go to jail.
Right. And if you want to change it, you work within the system to change it. So libertarians, there are two types of libertarians. There are the destination and direction libertarians. The destination libertarians are the ones who say, I'm not going to get involved in the process and engage the process. I'm going to stand from the sidelines, and I'm going to persuade people or yell at people in some cases and say that this is the absolute, this is how it should be, I am the standard to which you should aspire. They are necessary to keep directional libertarians moving in the right direction and keeping them pure. But the directional libertarians are the ones like myself who recognize that politics exists, elections exist, government exists, And so we should work within the framework, and whatever gets us a closer step to more liberty, more freedom, more personal responsibility, all the better.
You do what you got to do to win, right, within the rules.
Because right, if the Libertarian Party is not a political organization, is it a social club?
Yeah.
Which is, and that's a conversation I have with a lot of my libertarian friends here in the state of Indiana. What are you? Are you a political party, or are you just a philosophy club? You know, the only thing you're missing are the Dungeons and Dragons.
Well, a firm hand is needed, and a firm hand shall return at some point. So
it's frustrating, though, because it's herding cats. Getting a bunch of, at their core, individualists to the supremely end point of libertarianism to come out and say, hey, we need you to...
How do you get a bunch of individualists to participate in a mass movement?
Exactly. I mean, yeah. And you know, Joe Hopman said, after Ron Paul came and spoke, you know, it's herding cats.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, that's exactly what it is. It's awful.
Oh, totally. You know, I am much, you know, I have always wanted to go into talk radio, and this is a fulfillment of somewhat of a dream. I just would like to do this full time at some point. But when I worked for Abdul and I was Abdul's producer, I go back and listen to the shows, and the amount that I know I did not know was like, I'm embarrassed that I was talking. I should not have been talking, and I'd like
I agree.
Formally would like to apologize.
It's like,
to
why
you.
Are you chiming in? You have no idea what you're talking about.
Was there ever a whopper you just almost had to walk off the show?
Oh,
that
God,
he said?
Yeah. He smacked my face every day.
I mean, it's been so long. I mean, Spangle's been there. I mean, where do you start?
Don't even act like people don't walk up to you and ask about me and whatever. Where did I? People loved me. They loved that I gave you shit right back.
They loved the fact that one day you were stuck by the side of the road because you ran out of gas, and then Indianapolis Fire Chief Jim Greason was going to drive out and pick you up and give you a lift to the radio station.
Are you kidding me?
Oh, it was -2 degrees, and my car blew up. And I was stranded for hours calling in.
So it didn't run out of gas.
No. My car blew up and died. It was February and it was freezing. But no, my misadventures as...
Oh, I think I know what it was. We needed you to do something. We were downtown during the Indy 500 Festival Parade. And you went to go get ice cream. They have the picture of you holding the ice cream cone in your hand
on
Facebook.
Really?
Yes. We're like, where the hell's Spangle? I don't know. Think of it.
Oh, wow.
I was a consummate idiot. I'm telling you. I was an idiot. I was supposed to go to Colin Powell and record Colin Powell's press conference, and I got there right as the press conference ended because I couldn't find a place to park. And boy, was he mad at me the next day.
You were?
Colin Powell was like...
Colin Powell is...
not worthy.
Right.
Not worthy. What?
Of all the politicians that I could have missed, Colin Powell was the one I shouldn't have missed.
That's
but
one
I
of your heroes?
Yeah. Yeah. He was...
Ultimate pragmatist.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yes, so...
ultimate insider pragmatist, yeah. Yep, I got it.
Hey, you don't get to be a black guy and become Joint Chiefs of Staff without learning a few tricks and learn how to play the game.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's universally beloved and revered between both parties, so...
Yep. He was Ronald Reagan's national security advisor before he got appointed Joint Chiefs of Staff.
Yeah.
So I recognize that if I wanted to ever have a career in talk radio and political talk radio or political commentary of any type, I needed to get political experience. And I was mostly libertarian, and... When I got hired, I was still like, I don't know, should we really be allowed to own tanks? You know, and now I'm like, well, they have tanks, why can't I have a fucking tank? But, you know, so that experience, I really think that everybody who has political opinions should go and volunteer for campaigns and possibly run for office and get that political experience, that on-the-ground experience of knocking on doors, walking up and trying to persuade people. My life is so vastly improved because I have the experience of spending 4 years trying to get libertarian candidates and libertarian voters to do what they need to do.
To vote.
To vote, to engage in the process and not be crazy.
Yep.
So.
And the funny thing is, you appreciate it more because there's no worse job than county chairman or executive director. Because nobody wants to give you credit when they win, and everybody wants to blame you when they lose. Well, if you had just done this, and you had just done this.
If you had been out there hat in hand raising more money, we'd have had the infrastructure to get on the ballot.
No, hindsight is powerful in politics. People look back and they say, well, if you had just not done that with Ed Coleman, then I could have won. It's like, well, we didn't know.
Michael Haig?
No. That's a different time, different.
Okay.
Different Ed Coleman story.
You got my deepest sympathies.
Yeah, that guy. So
I'm going to be governor. Sure you will.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And after that Negro wakes up, you tell him what happened.
All right. So let's – any other final advice on practical politics for libertarians?
Like I said, the best way to get the best way to learn politics is to do it, is to find a candidate. And I know, you know, some places there may not necessarily be a libertarian candidate, but there may be, say – a Republican you can live with, or a Democrat you can live with, or, you know, maybe somebody want to run in a primary. You know, get involved. You know, find somebody and do the legwork.
Especially at the local level, would you agree that like so many of the issues are at that role of that position? It's a single issue position, so they may not have to be a libertarian across the board. But
right.
If on that issue they are, that's your candidate.
And here's the other thing too: somebody who agrees with you 70% of the time is better than somebody who agrees with you only 30% of the time. I mean, former Indiana Governor Mitch Daniels said it best: purity tests are for Nazis and suicide bombers. And if you're going to be waiting around for somebody to be 100% as to where you are on everything, you're going to have a problem.
Yeah. Or go run.
Yep.
Tell you what, go run.
And that really is what it comes down to, is just quit your bitching and go do something.
Yep.
I'm tired of hearing you talk at me because I'm not doing a good enough job as executive director. I could have done much better had you given some money and some time, or brought another friend.
And usually time is more valuable than money.
Way more. Way more. I just need money so I can buy the supplies to get the resources I need to give to the people who are willing to donate time.
Yeah.
You know what
And the thing is, and for people who've done this for a while, the trick is managing people and matching their talents with the skills that you need. Hey, Dave's a good writer. So Dave, guess what?
Right.
You're going to maintain you're a good writer, and you got but John's tech savvy. John, you're going to maintain the blog. Dave, you're going to do content. You know, Bill is good at getting people organized and rallied. This person is, you know, big in their community, neighborhood. Let's see if we can get them to kind of hold something we can introduce our candidate to.
Somebody like Melissa Hubbard, best organizer I've ever met. Great political organizer. Melissa's not going to run for office because that's not her skill set. And she knows that. She knows that she is great at throwing parties. And so she's going to put parties together.
Yep.
So what we want to do now is, like, not necessarily a lightning round, but just kind of go over some of the issues and pick your brain as somebody who is a professional prognosticator of politics. Thank you. I'm very proud of my assonance.
You've listened to Bruce Dumont's Beyond the Beltway. Congratulations.
My alliteration, I mean.
Proud of you.
So I want to get your opinion on several issues. Let's start locally, and we'll try and make them as national as possible for people because they're things that we've discussed on the show. Let's start with RFRA, the Religious Freedom Act. What was Mike Pence thinking? What went wrong, and what was going on behind the scenes of RFRA?
Well, the problem with RFRA was it was a solution looking for a problem. It was a solution looking for a problem that didn't exist, and then it found it.
Right.
In more ways than one. As I wrote back in January, if Republicans aren't careful in drafting this language, you know, to protect religious freedom and liberty, which I'm all for, however, there's a difference between an employer who's religious versus a religious employer. And that's something that the pro-RFRA people just couldn't figure out, is that when you open your doors to the public, you take the public as they are. And if you're in a place where the law simply says you can't discriminate based on sexual orientation, this is a no-brainer.
Right.
We're not talking about a religious employer, which would be a church, not-for-profit. We've always had sort of special status and carved out special exemptions for those type of organizations. But you know what? When we had the situation here in Indianapolis a couple of years ago about the cupcake place that didn't want to make the cupcakes for the same-sex couple, well, guess what? You're operating out of City Market. And when you operate out of City Market, you agree to, on part of the lease, you agree to follow the city rules and the city code. Well, guess what? City rules and city code said you can't discriminate based on sexual orientation. This is not rocket science.
Right.
And so for some strange reason, a bunch of people felt that a need to, you know, protect religious freedom and religious liberty. And they would say, well, this is on the books in 30-something other states. And Bill Clinton signed one in 1993. And Chuck Schumer was the author, blah, blah, blah. It's like, well, that may be true, but they didn't pass RFRA after two big fights over same-sex marriage where they got their asses kicked.
Yeah.
So that was the backdrop for which RFRA was taking place. And when Republicans, my Republican friends, who I love dearly, had the opportunity to include language in the bill that said you can't use RFRA as a defense in discrimination case, they took a pass on it, which in hindsight, they all admit now, we probably should have listened.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm like, yeah.
People thought that I wasn't for or against the law, or I mean, I was against the law, I guess, just because it made no sense. It just was like, why are you introducing this in any way, shape, or form? What are you doing?
But the good thing that came out of RFRA was the whole controversy over the First Church of Cannabis.
Oh, gosh.
Which leads me to my next. So Fallout 4, we'll get to that in a second, because that's a beautiful, beautiful story that we've really not talked about here on the show, and you're the man to do it.
Oh, did Melissa Hubbard give you a picture of you as Superman with a pot leaf?
Yes.
You're welcome.
Did you do that?
I did it. She messaged me and was like, would you do this real quick? And I'm like, I've only met him one time before, and I'm not sure.
Thank you. At least you made me look thinner, so I'll give you that.
You were looking trim, spelled. You know, you couldn't have been too mad.
It's like, I got about 10 more pounds to go. Then we're good.
What was going on in the Mike Pence administration? And I mean, how much do you think that has hurt him?
At first, they didn't think, they couldn't see what the big deal was, to be honest with you. Whenever I would talk to them, they're like, Abdul, this is on the, it was the same thing. This is happening over the States, Bill Clinton, just the standard stuff. I was like, but I don't think you guys get it. This is different. I mean, Indiana just had two big fights over same-sex marriage in the courts and HGR3. And then you're bringing this up. Now, had you done this beforehand, before all that, you know, back in, say, 2008, 2009, nobody would have cared, and we wouldn't be having this discussion right now. But since you did it in the backdrop of all that, the line I always use is, it's the difference between buying your wife flowers because it's a birthday or buying your wife flowers because you forgot it was her birthday.
Yeah, exactly right, yeah.
And to me, it seemed like this debate, the Pence administration in general seems so nationally oriented. Like, they would, who's on their staff that even is the... you know, sort of the, what do you, or I'm having a brain fart.
Where is the,
other side?
Presenting the where's argument. The intellectual diversity?
Yeah,
is the
yeah, the devil's advocate when he's pursuing something.
Mitch Daniels. We call them in politics the WTF guy.
Yeah. Right.
And there was a, without betraying any confidences, there was a question or two as to who exactly was in that role as a WTF person. Because it just wasn't.
Because it seemed to me that Mitch Daniels and Mike Pence are just two totally different types of politicians. You know, Mitch brought in Mickey Maurer to be his Secretary of Commerce, who was a huge Democrat, who was the former owner of the station in which we met. You know, Mitch seemed to have that lust for intellectual diversity and to surround himself with WTF people. And sometimes seems that Mike Pence surrounds himself with the people who only are Facebook friends with other white Christian Republicans.
There was always a question. I mean, there were some people in the administration who would kind of slam on the brakes, but sometimes the curse of being sort of inside the establishment is, of course, the echo chamber. And that's why I've always said anybody goes into politics, you're going to run for office, have a WTF person. Yeah. That's the guy who can walk in or girl who can walk in and say, what are you doing? And if you think about it, every major American president has always had one. Ronald Reagan had one, George Herbert Walker Bush, Bill Clinton, W, and even Barack Obama. And when that person left, that's when things kind of started. You can kind of tell when Karen Hughes left George W., when David Axelrod left with Barack Obama.
And Rahm, even.
You kind of see things kind of going off the rails a little bit.
When Chris Galt left Wall. Inside joke.
Yeah.
What about, though, like, with Pence, was it arrogance to say it's the, like, I always call it the race for the evangelical. He wanted to get the evangelical voter first, declare, and get into Iowa.
It wasn't arrogance. It was just sort of the governor, who I like and respect, just couldn't fathom what the big deal was. It's like, I don't understand. Why is everybody upset?
Really?
Yep. Mm-hmm. And it was totally genuine. I was like, you guys don't get it? I mean, I had a very deep, involved conversation with a very high-ranking Pence administration official. I was like, can I curse on your podcast?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
It's like, dude, what the fuck are you guys doing?
Yeah.
Like, you have... Like, I don't see, well, this is their right to complain and boycott. Like, you don't understand. Great disturbance in the force.
Yeah.
Like, hi. No, this isn't just a little minor thing that's going to boil over here and just kind of go by. No, this is bad.
You don't understand. You made Chris Spangle care about politics for a few minutes.
It's like, but Abdul, you understand. We're on a diplomatic mission. But this is a diplomatic ship. Where's the ambassador?
Right.
And you don't have a state-run news agency like you thought you were going to control the messaging.
What was that about?
Actually, now, I will say, and I'll do, I will defend them on the state-run news agency, on Just In, because I did not think Just In was a bad idea. Just In is no different than what any other state does with a information service.
It was really supposed to be a news information, like a AP.
Just a clearinghouse for state government stuff. Exactly. That's what it was supposed to be. The problem was when they wrote the memo to describe what it was, they hired a newspaper person who used newspaper terms.
So it gave the appearance of something it wasn't from the get-go, right? Because of how I got you.
Yeah, but it was just. I mean,
but then the press conference was terrible responding to it. It was like no one had talked to anybody. Like, well, we'll show up, we'll answer questions without even having.
It's pretty clear their press strategy up until this point has been pretty dismal.
And I'll never forget the day that broke because I was actually in Chicago in the Daily Center, about to walk into a courtroom, and my phone went off. I was like, well, can't do anything about it now.
Wow.
And then the next time I was back in Chicago, I'm about to walk in the same courtroom, another Justin issue. It was a state representative, Justin, who got caught on the... can't do anything about it now.
One of the state reps from here in Indianapolis got caught with that skank that brought down Anthony Weiner. What's her? Sydney Leathers.
Sydney Leathers.
Yeah, that despicable, awful human being that I cannot stand because she's just gross.
You know, wasn't she?
I've seen her work. She's really not attractive.
No, she isn't. I've seen the same video. Not attractive.
I wasn't impressed.
No. She was an intern. Though,
she does look all that great in HD.
No, she's just she's out there trolling for powerful men. You know, wanting to get by things.
Not really catfishing, but just, you know. Fishing.
More like carping.
Carping. Yeah. Scraping the bottom.
That would be an accurate depiction.
Yeah.
Now, so out of RFRA comes the First Church of Cannabis. I tried to set up an interview with Bill Levin. He's too big for us now. He's too big
to talk to Wolf Blitzer. No,
it was actually my fault that the interview fell through. But good old Bill Levin is a guy who is basically like a P.T. Barnum of Indianapolis. He's so well known around here. A longtime concert promoter. Longtime cannabis activist, possible user. I don't want to say anything that might, you know, put him in legal danger. But has run as a libertarian several times for state senate, I think he ran, and for city council, where marijuana was his main issue. And he's just as Tom Griswold said on my radio show today, if they pulled a hair sample of Bill Levin. They would
find he goes to church frequently.
His devotion to his religion is solid. What is the First Church of Cannabis? How did this spring up, and what has happened?
Well, the origins of the First Church of Cannabis actually came out of a place called Nicky Blaine's.
I knew you had something to do with this.
What, you just saw?
You're just way too interested in posting about it. And I know you, that if it's your idea, you get really excited by it.
Interested.
Right. You'll never post that you were on this podcast. Well, you might, because you said, hey, can I come on the podcast? So you might, but like I know you, so if it's your idea...
So when you saw all the stuff, it was like, you know what, there's just something about this story that's just...
Somewhere... There is a black hand.
You made a comment.
There's a black invisible hand guiding this process.
You know, theoretically, you could do... Huh, I never thought of it that way. Then walked away.
There's just a lot of smart strategery here that...
Yes, there is.
Inception.
That reeks of Darth Vader.
No, what happened was, like I said, early on in January, doing the whole religious freedom thing, I'm just sitting there working on a column for the newspaper downstairs at... but not downstairs, but there's a place in downtown Indianapolis called Nicky Blaine's The Cigar... Martini Bar, which is a true bastion of freedom and liberty, because you actually have a cigar there and be left alone.
For now.
Oh, no, forever.
If he has anything to do with it, yeah.
No, the line will be drawn here and now. We will not be assimilated by the Borg.
You white trash people in Southport at that place, you're not allowed to have your cigarette, but God damn, if you touch Abdul's cigars at Nicky Blaine's, he will go to the mattress.
Darn right. Cigars, a civilized person's piece of tobacco. No, so during the whole RFRA thing, it was right around the time that the law had passed and everything was sort of kind of died down a little bit. And I got to thinking, it's like, you know what? I wonder if the whole point of RFRA is that the government can't infringe on your religious liberty without a compelling interest. I wonder if I could. No. No.
Who would ever
Holy
be interested
crap.
In that?
Wait a second. So they're on my laptop. Holy I just think Indiana just may have accidentally decriminalized marijuana for religious purposes. So I did a little bit of legal research and some other things. Like, holy shit, I think they just did. Huh.
Who?
Hey, Bill Levin. Check out this blog post.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And next thing you know, here we are.
Here we are, the Grand Poobah of pot.
I call him the high priest.
The highest priest, yes. I got in trouble because he was like, I don't want a lot of pot jokes around this. Yeah. I'm like, Bill, you're starting a fucking church that smokes pot. Okay.
Yeah.
So they have, they on July 1st, when the law went into effect, they had their first service, and the Marion County Police Department, the criminal justice system here in town, really mobilized to crack down on them. There were five people shot in like the span of an hour. A couple days ago,
it was interesting because I'd always been asking the public safety director and chief of police, so how are you guys going to handle, you know, this whole first church cannabis thing? And even and Terry Curry, in fairness to him, had also written something about people might use RIFRA as a defense in criminal matters. But Terry's examples were a bit more extreme, like someone would justify domestic violence or
right. you know, child sacrifice,
yeah, child sacrifice, just starving their children really? Or you know, underage sex with minors, and I was like, no, that's not the. That's not what's going to happen. As a colleague of mine, we're talking one night where RIFRA is going to, where the problem is going to be under what it was sort of called those nuisance laws.
Right.
You know, somebody who's burning something in their backyard as part of, you know, their Wiccan Druid-esque type ceremony. Like, sure. That's where RIFRA is going to kick in. And that's where the state's going to have the problem. And so I'd asked the chief a couple times, so you guys ready for the first church of cannabis? And the chief said, and he, Chief and I get along really well. He's like, I'm not here to provide you with cheap entertainment. I'm not going to do it for you. I am not. Like, I know with, because with in the 21st century, with all the controversy we've had this year with law enforcement departments, you know, across the country, and everybody got a camera phone. Could you imagine the cops kicking in the door of a church?
Right.
And all the stuff on the internet. And it's not like Indiana hasn't had some problems, you know, as of late anyway. Jared, mm-hmm. RIFRA.
Yeah.
They don't have the momentum on that.
Right, yeah. The odds have not been in their favor lately. So everybody's kind of wondering, what are these guys going to do? And so they have a news conference on that Friday before the first church service to say, hey, marijuana is illegal. If anybody's caught using it, they will be arrested. Anybody who goes to the service could be charged with, you know, contributing to a public nuisance, which is where I raised my hand and said, are you telling us media people going to get arrested? And then they had to kind of clarify that. No. As long as you got your credentials on, you're
right.
You're fine. Like, okay.
Just like in Ferguson.
Yeah.
Thank Leslie you. Lowry.
Yeah.
As long as we're good. And so, kind of the brilliance of all that was when law enforcement threatened to arrest the cannabitarians, as they call themselves.
Oh my gosh. Awesome.
That gave them the legal standing to sue under RIFRA, because to have standing to sue, you need to suffer an injury from the government or the threat of an injury. And the threat of arrest for using marijuana as part of their sacrament and their religious practices open the door for them to get to be able to go to court and sue.
Why do you have that smile on your face? Why do you have that smile on your face? Like, you had an idea that...
Here's why I have the smile on my face. Because I was always kind of wondering, how are they going to challenge the law without getting arrested?
Right.
And as soon as the threat was made that we will arrest these people, I was like, threat of injury. I had to go back in my Constitutional Law 101 from law school books. Injury, threat of injury, causation, redress. Yep. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
They can go to court now.
Right.
And what was fascinating, and like you're talking about, you know, sort of the different types of libertarians and the people who kind of come after you because they don't think you did what you should have done, even though they didn't do a damn thing.
You're not down enough for the cause.
Yeah.
Is when Levin put on his Facebook page and said, you know what, we're not going to, no, I don't want anybody to get arrested and have a criminal record. You know, we will not consume marijuana at our first service. All these people who didn't live in Indiana, by the way,
of course,
were complaining, saying, you guys are a bunch of wusses. You know, you should, you know, where's the civil disobedience and where's blah, blah, blah. None of them will have a criminal record. They have nothing to worry right. about. So it's really easy to be Statler and Waldorf from the Muppets and, you know, up in the friggin' cheap seats.
Yeah.
But I was like, well, it's like, you guys don't understand. Originally, if you're going to go the criminal route to challenge this, it's high reward, but it's also high risk.
Yeah.
Because if you lose, you now have a marijuana conviction
yeah.
on your record. civilly this way, you get all the reward and none of the risk.
Yep. Yeah, exactly right. It's why it's brilliant.
Yeah, it's a brilliant strategy.
This is why I say Bill Levin is just one lab accident away from getting superpowers.
I swear to God, man.
He's Doc Brown from...
There's something about Bill. I don't know what it is. We've got to have him on the podcast because Bill is just the most fascinating guy. And
Geniuses are always eccentric.
I don't know if he's a genius or what, but he just gets it done. That's for sure.
Yep.
So how do you think this shakes out for them? Will we be able to smoke weed here in Indiana whenever we want?
I'm not exactly sure how it's going to turn. I think right now it's 50-50 because I think, first of all, when you look at where marijuana laws have been challenged under RFRA statutes before, they haven't always won, but they have had some victories. But you got to have all your ducks
right in
a row. And usually the people who've been busted using marijuana, either driving, smoking pot, or trafficking, and say, well, that's part of my religion. And the courts are like, yeah, right, sure it is. What Levin and those guys have done, this makes all my brothers and sisters in the media mad because I know what I'm talking about, is they got their IRS not-for-profit status. They're registered with the Secretary of State. They have a building that is zoned for religious purposes. It's not like they're just meeting in somebody's basement. It's an actual church that was zoned for religious purposes. You know, they have all the things that the courts look at. And courts are very hesitant to say whose religious is real and whose isn't.
Sure.
Which is why one of the things they'll do is they just have sort of like these, you know, these sort of check marks. So, do you have no tenants? Do you have a building? Do you have a regular place of worship? And they're getting all their ducks in a row.
Right.
And by the way, the more they meet on Wednesdays and don't smoke pot, the more they can pass a test as a legitimate religion.
It's funny people would be down on them because they're getting their ducks in a row.
Yeah.
Right. The media wants the crazy. They want the spectacle.
Yeah, and when we had this conversation at WIBC Radio, I'd have people saying, well, they're not a real religion. Well, what do you mean? They're only 2 months old. Well, Christianity was only 2 months old at one point in time. Right. And by the way, Bill Levin started out with more followers than you guys did.
That is for sure, yeah.
Because Jesus only had 12 friends.
Jesus had 12 friends. I mean, Bill Levin has
I would argue only 11.
Yeah, good point.
Bill Levin has like at least 3,000 Facebook friends.
Yeah, Bill Levin started out with 45,000.
Right. How many people do you estimate showed up?
The place was packed the first time, around like 150 people, and on their second service, they were still packed.
Wow.
Yeah. So if you're in the Indy area, go check them out.
3400 South Keystone.
There you go.
You need a new meme then. You don't need to be Superman. You need to be the Godfather.
No.
He doesn't want any recognition as the puppet master.
Because only saying it publicly.
No, because then people are going to come and ask him for, well, you don't mind people asking you for favors, because then...
Now you owe me, but I got stuff to do.
Okay, so other local...
Glenn Beck, really? Seriously?
Those are autographed for my time at WXNT. I got those for free.
Okay.
Swag.
One of them is actually Sissy Sherlock's. I still owe it to her. Other local issues.
Local issues.
Local
I'll tell
or
you
state.
What, with the recent ruling on the gay marriage law, the unconstitutionality of bans, what is your prognostication for states like Louisiana, whose attorney general is essentially saying, no luck?
You can say whatever you want. You see, and the problem is those guys set a very, very bad precedent. Because by you basically telling the people of Louisiana, hey, we don't have to follow the law, what's the people of Louisiana saying? Hey, well, I don't have to follow your law either. I mean, that's the...
It's a direct, or it sets a precedent, clearly, of civil disobedience.
Yeah. And see, but the thing is, and it kind of goes to these county clerks who have these religious objections, like the one in Tennessee, and then like the staff quit, or whatever. I was like, first of all...
the one in Kentucky who has four divorces but swears to uphold the...
The sanctity of marriage. Right. Or as one of my colleagues said, which I thought was hilarious, in Las Vegas, you can meet a hooker in a bar, wait 30 minutes, go down to a church where there's a guy who's dressed like Elvis will marry you, but gay marriage is bad.
Right.
And consummate it 30 minutes west in Pahrump.
Yeah. Exactly.
That was specific, Greg.
I mean, you can say whatever you want, but eventually somebody's going to challenge it and you're going to have to follow the law.
I mean,
it's that simple. And what I just find so disheartening and disconcerting, because my whole thing about gay marriage, if you don't like gay marriage, don't marry somebody who's gay. I mean,
Yeah.
How will you know? Well, there's a joke I'll tell off air. Might even be a little bit more too risque for we are libertarians.
If you want, you go for it. Well, trust me. We had people yell the C word the other day on this podcast. It's out of control here.
Well, my writing joke is always said, you know, because I believe in marriage equality, because everybody deserves to be as happy as my wife. No, let's make that perfectly clear. If you don't like gay marriage, don't marry somebody who's gay. Well, how do you know his dick will probably taste like shit? You know?
Oh, boy.
There you go.
Well.
That's direct and hilarious.
Thank you.
I'm going to tell that one to Tom tomorrow. He'll die.
I do try it. And it's an old joke, by the way.
Oh, yeah, so, yeah. I've heard it.
Yeah. I mean, why would you be this upset and this hell-bent on people who want to be happy and in a monogamous relationship where they assume financial and emotional and responsibility for each other?
And you would think that a monogamous relationship would be healthier for society because they'd be having sex with one person.
Well, and assuming they're having sex at all.
Exactly.
They aren't married.
Hey, I was married once, trust me. And the, you know, the whole rap, like I saw somebody post an article about the, you know, the health risks to not only the gay couple, but also society at large, because gays are just full of diseases than fucking each other and spreading it everywhere. And, you know, I like the dude who posts this. He's not a bad guy. It's just like, you know, I'm posting this in Christian love so I can help my fellow gay brothers. It's like, yeah,
no offense,
by calling them basically the diseased blanket that we threw to the Indians.
You call them smallpox. Right. Thanks.
Yeah, exactly right.
But isn't that the resistance to cultural change? I mean, isn't there that, for some reason, like, you know, it's that, well, even though there isn't an original American sentiment?
Well, if you think about it, if you look at the course of human events in human history, it is always attrition takes care of everything.
Yeah.
I mean, back in, if you were to ask the general population back in the 1940s what they thought about interracial marriage, 80% of the population would have said no.
Oh, yeah. You'd have got money to fund a study to prove that it was terrible for society.
And actually, interracial marriage wasn't actually technically legal until 1965. You know, Loving versus Virginia, where an interracial couple actually got arrested and was going to be forced to divorce because Virginia had anti-miscegenation laws that said you couldn't marry outside of your race. And the argument that the numbnuts tried to make was, well, this isn't discriminatory because we're saying no white person can marry any black person, so it applies to blacks and whites evenly.
Separate but equally.
Yeah, and the courts kind of looked at them like they were insane. And
how long was that on the books? Good long time, I imagine?
Since slavery.
Okay, so.
But I think until like the 70s or something?
It was on the books about 1965.
Yeah, okay.
So that's quite a long time to grasp onto something with its last breaths, which is how far along do you see that with
attrition? I think attrition. I mean, there are people who are not prejudiced, who are not bigoted, who don't hate anybody. But if you're like my father, who's almost 80 years old, you know, who fought in the civil rights movement, he just can't get his arms around same-sex marriage. It's just not.
Yeah.
It's just not going to happen. So we know what? We don't have that conversation. My mother-in-law is a very deep, devout Baptist woman. She's not going to change. She doesn't hate anybody. She would never be rude or mean to anybody. But that issue, she just cannot get her arm around. So
she would vote against a politician who supports it?
I think she would look at the politician in context. I mean, she's a
you know, in its entirety.
Well, she's a devout Christian, and she would look for somebody that shares her Christian values, Christian principles. And I told her that's perfectly fine. But we live in this place called the real world, and we're not a theocracy. But our laws are based on religion. No, law is a practical application of religion. If the moral code has no practical application, it's called useless.
And then she says, oh, Abdul, I'm not even going to argue with you anymore.
Like, fine, I'll go back to watching Bob's Burgers, which is what I was doing before you walked in my house.
You're coming to church with me this Sunday, Abdul.
He has a deal. He goes to church. Is it once a month?
The deal that my wife originally I made was, because I'm kind of agnostic, I don't care. Do I believe in God? Yes, because I'm living proof of his genius and creativity.
Every time he hears thunder,
I run to the window and take a bow. Thank you. The deal was, my wife wanted me to go to church. I was like, honey, I'm almost 40 years old. It ain't going to happen. So we negotiated, which I said I would go with her one Sunday a month. But it has to be the early service, 8 o'clock, because I got stuff to do. And they can't go along with 8 o'clock service because they got the 11 o'clock people coming in. So what I would do is when it was working, I would go at the end of the month, then I'd go at the first, I'd go the last Sunday of 1 month, then the following Sunday of the first month, and then get 8 Sundays.
Smart.
She figured it out, didn't she?
Well, what happened was, I just make sure point, we went out the Saturday night before.
Very smart.
Because you know my wife can't drink. You know, one or two cocktails and you know, she's out like a light. She's got a little bit better. Now she's up to four.
That's not bad for cocktails.
Yeah.
Well, Abdul can drink like... there isn't anybody who can drink. I mean, you can drink.
Kinda.
The trolls from Martinsville can drink. Abdul, there's nobody like him. He'll have a beer, and then he'll have wine, and then he'll have tequila shots, and then he'll have whiskey shots, and then he'll have a mojito.
Like, how do you...
I mean, Tom Hervey at Cocktails, Cocktails and Conversation, he would just be like, I've never seen anybody mix so many different types of alcohol at once. So... What is it about this gay marriage issue that, for whatever reasons, I mean, there are certain issues that just light up the phones. This is what people want to talk about. This is what people discuss. And it somehow has become the main issue for Republicans. Why is this? I mean, it's clearly just...
Because they have spent the last 30, 40 years appealing to a socially Christian evangelical base, and that has always gotten them over the hump. But now the base is in the minority, and they're stuck between a rock and a hard place, pardon the pun. Because it's how do you win a primary when it's the more socially conservative people who vote in the primary, but the general population is in a whole different place, which is why Bobby Jindal will never be president.
Right. So is there any hope for a Republican president, if you're hoping for a Republican president? Many libertarians are hoping for Rand Paul.
Actually, yes, there is. There was a story in Politico, and the guy did the analysis, which I thought was really brilliant, because it's something I knew it was brilliant because I've been thinking about the exact same thing. Because you got, like, what, more Republicans running for president than Duggar children right now? Sometimes the result's kind of the same, depending on who you talk to. Yeah, so many people fighting for the far right, and that they're fighting for the far right crazies, that actually about 30 to 40% of the Republican electorate is moderate. You know, they're the fiscal conservative, socially moderate, you know, not making a big deal. So while all 10 of those guys are fighting for that small pool, guess what? I'm short of my base over here amongst the moderates. That's kind of how Mitt Romney won. He was he was everybody's number two choice.
Right.
Because I always wanted the more socially conservative, but they couldn't win anywhere else, so they kept getting...
Yep.
And then I just want someone competent that doesn't forget which department they're going to shut down.
Right. So how do you think the... Who do you think is the Republican nominee? How do you see it playing out?
Well, people say right now, you know, Donald Trump is ahead with 15%. That just means 85% of the population wants somebody else.
We told you here on We Are Libertarians, that guy would be leading polls. I mean,
he leads national polls, though. That's the thing.
Because he has the most name ID.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's the one thing to... There's a difference between who you date and who you marry and who you mess around with.
There's a little bit of nihilism, too. It's like, if we're going to have an election, let's have Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump. Let's do it.
Yep.
Get Ron Paul and let's have a party.
I want a sideshow. I don't want an election.
And there's your libertarian candidate. There's your libertarian president.
Yeah.
If that's what we're boiling down to.
Yeah.
No. What about Bernie Sanders? How do you feel about him?
I was not impressed. I want to give everybody free college. Really, Bernie? Free college, huh? No skin in the game whatsoever. Just let anybody walk in the door for free. You know what happens when you give away stuff for free? You just have less of it and it's more expensive.
Yep.
That's what happens when you don't care about price.
Yep.
Yeah.
You got to have some skin in the game.
You get the American healthcare system.
I mean, if you want to make it more affordable, I think there are some things we can do. First, I think we do is stop giving out so many student loans, because that's what's driven up the cost of college. We told everybody they need to go, so give everybody a ton of money. So guess what happens? I put a ton of money in one place, inflationary prices kick up, and now what's more?
Anytime you add financing and amortize it over a period of years so it's more affordable, people are going to spend more.
Yep.
It's just that simple. And then it becomes an arms race. How many can we get in?
It's a bad idea. So, but that's just me.
So who's the Republican nominee? How do you see it playing out?
Well, if I had like I said, right now, Jeb Bush is, you know, clearly, I would argue, the front runner with $117
million
dollars to play with. I would say take a look at your Jeb Bushes, your John Kasichs, and your, to a lesser degree, your Chris Christies. Because those are because all the other guys are going to be fighting for the hard
right
as much as they can get. That's what they're fighting for. So that's why I say look at the moderates, because I would argue they start with a bigger pool, which gives them, you know, a lot more staying power over the long run.
Sure. Lesson for Rand Paul there. That's for sure.
He's helped by being Iowa and New Hampshire first. That is everything.
Yeah. But here's the Republicans' problem, and George Will said it best. You got to be able to win in a blue state.
Mm-hmm.
Rand Paul is outpolling Hillary Clinton in Colorado. Well, and Wisconsin and Michigan.
Yeah, but it's also, what is it? What's today?
Yeah.
July 18th?
No doubt.
2015?
Yeah. But I mean, no other Republicans within 10 points in a blue state.
But what's today's date?
You really think so? You think there's a Republican that'll appeal to Democrat
voters?
No,
what's today's date?
July 9th.
What year is it?
2015.
Yeah, okay. Let me tell you something. Back in, you guys weren't born yet, February of 1992, George Herbert Walker Bush had a 98% approval rating coming after the Gulf War.
Ross Perot.
Nope.
Read my lips.
No. A lot of people think Ross Perot did it. It was not Ross Perot. I have the data to back it up.
No, I know you're right on the polling data, and you're right on the exit polls that he didn't pull, but I still swear to God, Bill Clinton...
No, look at it like this. If, and now answer this question. If I have an incumbent and a challenger, and a third person comes in, if I'm not going to vote for Bill Clinton as that third... If I'm not going to vote for Bill Clinton as my second choice, as my first choice, why would I vote for George W. Bush or Herbert Walker Bush?
Why would I show up at the polls even though?
Well, no, but think about it. I have two candidates. Yeah. So candidate A and candidate B, and the electorate's trying to decide which one. Now candidate C jumps in.
Yeah.
I would argue candidate C is more likely to take away from the challenger than to take away from the incumbent. Because if you're going to vote for the incumbent, you're going to vote for the incumbent anyway,
yeah,
regardless of who else is in there.
No doubt.
But now I've got two people challenging the incumbent, so I just split the anti-incumbent vote.
Mm-hmm. And... the policy, you know, the protectionism of Perot with NAFTA and everything like that. But then you follow up H.W. Bush. In 96, you run Bob Dole, who's a protectionist similar to Ross Perot in ideology. That makes me think maybe the polling,
no,
the exit polling.
No, because 1996, once again, you guys were, you know, that tall. Everything was fine.
What do you mean everything was fine?
Economy is fine. People making money.
Oh, no,
right.
Yeah, no tech reason boom. To change. Yeah.
Why change horses in midstream?
Oh, yeah, I just meant maybe the methods, the survey research methods used.
I mean, we always get better over time, but the exit polling showed in 1992 that Ross Perot took, well, people voted for Ross Perot. George Herbert Walker Bush was not their first choice.
Not even the Republicans' first choice, probably.
Well, the problem was what happened to George Herbert Walker Bush in 92. Is kind of what happened to Jimmy Carter in 1980. He had a primary challenger. Because Jimmy Carter had Ted Kennedy run against him from his left, which split the party. George Herbert Walker Bush had Pat Buchanan. And yeah. Anytime you get a primary challenger like that in your political party, which is why I'm not necessarily convinced, I think Hillary will be the nominee, but I think she'll be vulnerable because Bernie Sanders speaks to that, I mean, that far left wing of the Democratic Party that wants free this and
the
free that.
The purity police,
universal,
yeah.
Yep. Just like Republicans, there are just 12 of them. On the Democratic side, there's just one.
And that's interesting.
So what I do for a living.
No, I feel the same. I think it's odd that there's so much, there's a lot of press around the Rand Paul, Bernie Sanders voter. And we discussed this a little bit on our last show, but that seems so odd to me. Do you find that odd?
Because they're different. I mean, Bernie Sanders is actually, he can draw a crowd, and he's, you know, given Hillary, and Hillary's not necessarily the best candidate, you know, for a reason. That's why she kind of lost in 2008. But then again, I've always maintained that African-Americans advance more socially as a group than women do. That's just our history. But, you know, people like a contest. And media, and I tell people, when they get mad about the media is biased. No, the media is a business. And there's no business. And I don't make money if there's no contest.
Yeah. So what about, so it would be Bernie and then Jim Webb threw his name in the ring. And I like Jim Webb. I think if he is able to perform, kind of like how Newt did in the, what was that? Was that, oh, yeah, 08, when Newt was able to get some momentum and win South Carolina. If he can have a rock star moment in the Democratic debate, he's the kind of guy that appeals to the blue-collar Reagan Democrat.
Yeah, because he's from Virginia, which is a purple state now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what... If you're a Democrat, you need that kind of person who can win.
Trending blue, even.
Yep. A lot of people move from the D.C. suburbs into Northern Virginia.
Yeah.
And by the way, Hispanics are now the largest population in California.
And Donald Trump is going to win that vote.
Yep.
He's going to win the Latino vote.
And make
him
pay for it.
Well, they're building the wall.
I got to say, that is brash. I mean, that is
Well, that's Donald
gutsy.
For you.
No, what it is because I'm writing a column now about free speech. I haven't totally figured out how I want to do it, but people say that we're, and it kind of ties back to the gay marriage thing, people think we're sort of in this hypersensitive universe where you can't say this and you can't say this. You know what? You can say whatever you want. But if you're not willing to take the consequences of what you say, then maybe you need to shut up. Because the government hasn't come in, shut anybody down, close anybody's shop, or tell them what they can't say. The situation in Oregon is a little different because it was an administrative hearing. The Oregon said you cannot, as part of your business license, promote discrimination. That's a whole different thing. You can say whatever you want as long as you're willing to deal with the consequences. If you're not, then maybe you need to be quiet. Mm-hmm. So says the guy in talk radio.
Yeah, so this could be all to the detriment of you. You could be off the radio.
I'll just go practice law. Okay.
That's actually the first time I saw you was at the Bulin Symposium at IUPUI. And were you still practicing attorney then?
Yep.
No kidding.
You still practice.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah? I just thought you were teaching.
So let's talk about Greece for a minute. Greg, you want to explain what happened in Greece?
Yeah.
Give the listeners a rundown and kind of refresh.
So John Travolta and Olivia Newton-John.
Yep. They are at a beach in the summer. Have you followed it all?
Either, yeah.
You have? Okay.
Greece is the word.
Greece is the word. Have you followed it all?
A little bit.
All right. So basically what's going on is the European Union is being tested as a political organization and a monetary union at the moment. Greece had took on a bunch of debt. They probably shouldn't have been admitted to the EU when they were. They took them on, had too much debt when they were admitted. Their economy wasn't strong enough to sort of keep pace with everyone else. As their economy started to implode because they couldn't meet the obligations of what they borrowed from the IMF, from the European Central Bank, and from mainly Germany, since they're the only one that usually has a surplus in the European Union, they got themselves into a pickle where they had to start paying it back. Their creditors weren't going to lend them any more money unless they made huge cuts to their social welfare state and raised taxes dramatically. Their far left, Prime Minister Spiras held a referendum basically saying, what should we do? They rejected the austerity measures, and he used that as leverage and created a coalition within the Greek parliament so he wouldn't get undermined by someone trying to challenge him to go back to the negotiating table. And right now, I just read on Business Insider, they have agreed to pension reforms and several tax increases in order to get temporary funding over a 3-year bailout. Yeah. Basically money that Germany's never going to get back. Because if they had rejected what was going to happen, Germany was going to have a $2 billion hole in their annual budget. Yeah. You know, they're counting back the money they're going to get back. But then it's funny, Russia, I've always said that's the one to watch in this region. Right before they were going to meet with all the ministers, all 18 ministers, the European Central Bank said they would stop the credit their credit line to the Greek banks in order to meet the depositors' demands. And everyone in Greece is limited to like $40 a day or $60 a day. And so once they cut that credit line off of, Spiras called Putin. And he didn't reveal that he offered a credit line, but I'd bet you anything he did. Because no way do you have that referendum and threaten to leave without something in your back pocket.
Yeah.
Here's my thing on Greece. Once again, cradle to the grave doesn't work.
Yeah.
Eventually, you got to pay for this stuff. The stuff costs money. And when you can tell people they can retire at 50 and they're going to live to 100, and here's your 2-month vacation, it's like,
Yeah.
That's the thing is like, there was a global economic crisis in 08. Latvia and Lithuania both faced the same budget fall as Greece did. Instead, they took huge austerity measures. They bloodlet, which is what Paul Krugman calls it, where, austerity causes you just to bleed out more because it's like cutting yourself to get healthy. And they were able to storm back and be the two strongest, fastest-growing economies in all of the EU within 4 years. Now, Greece doesn't want to do that because they don't necessarily see the debt that they as citizens have accumulated by the national government as theirs. They kind of have an argument. Is it your debt if you didn't benefit from it? It was spent 50 years before?
Right.
You're responsible for it.
Unless you're Iceland, who rejected the EU back in the crisis, decided to nationalize their bank, said, you know what? We'll be all right with that international credit markets. They were back getting access to short-term financing within 5 months. And so they followed the Swedish model from their banking crisis in the late 90s. And if I'm a Greek citizen, I'm torn on it. Would you want to pay it back if you didn't borrow it?
But doesn't matter.
Well, it does now. There's the real option of not doing it.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, you cannot pay it back. Okay, fine. Now leave the euro and go start printing back drachmas again and go start getting wheelbarrows because that's what it's going to take to buy bread. I've seen this before. It's called the Weimar Republic.
But this worked in Iceland and Sweden.
Yeah, but the Greeks aren't Iceland.
No.
See, the Greeks, it's nice outside. That's why they don't have a work ethic.
That's what the Latvians are saying.
It's cold up north. They got to worry. Got to move and work to stay warm.
That's what's so funny. That's exactly what the Balkan states are saying. What do you mean? Their pensions are twice as big as ours. We took all these tax increases and pension cuts, and we still made it just fine. And they're like, you lazy Greeks, we're not going to take the money we know we're not going to get back and give it to you so you can not work. And I get that argument as well. It's just
happens when you kind of hang around the Mediterranean. Yeah, it's kind of cool. Yeah. Roman soldier walks into a bar, orders 5 beers.
And on that note, though, it seems like, do you think it's a bad idea strategically for Greece to be the proxy of Russia within the European Union? And this is just the monetary union, not the political union.
Well, see, but here's, well, actually, it's kind of funny. If you check your history, we're the one who kind of helped overthrow the Greek government shortly after World War II and threw the communists out. So there's a little bit of a history there. But I don't. But the price of oil the way it is, I don't think the Russians are financially that strong anyway, and their own economy is kind of bottoming out. So,
which makes me think they're getting the money from Chinese or Saudi Arabia, who they just announced a trade deal with, which is, it just seems crazy to me. Like, everything's so intertwined, and yet we're, yeah, we're negotiating with Iran with a nuclear arms deal.
Because the world, and once again, this kind of goes back to the same-sex marriage thing, the world is changing. I mean, you know, 20, 30 years ago, my iPad 2, you know, was just maybe, you know, in the back of somebody's head. You know, go back 20, 30 years before that, you know, there's no way my father could have imagined that we'd be having a conversation and our telephones and iPads have more technology than what sent a person to the moon in 1969. And this type of change scares the hell out of people.
Yeah, technological change.
Yeah. And it used to be, you know, we were protected by the oceans. You know, what happened in Europe or what happened in Asia, yes, that is me on my...
I couldn't tell who that was, but you have a picture of yourself on your phone.
Yeah, that way everybody knows who it is. And those mafia, black mafia, you know, trilateral commission meetings, everybody
has the same phone, yeah.
How was Bohemian Grove?
It was great this time of year. I mean, you know, the tentacles of Odessa Bar has, you know, great salad.
All right, any other topics, final topic?
No, the Grexit is what it's, I guess, been called, or Greexit. I don't know, it just doesn't make sense to me for the Greeks to cave on all the pension reforms, to be quite honest. They fought and fought and fought this and fought any austerity measures, even had a national referendum. And tonight, it looks like they've appeared to make the pension reforms, make tax increases, make huge labor reforms. Because that's the hard part with the Greeks, is that you can't fire anybody. They get a guaranteed pension and a guaranteed employment forever. That cradle of grave. And I don't know, it just seems odd to me. There's going to be something big fallout, I feel like, by them deciding at the last minute to cave. I'm going to be interested to see what it is. I feel like the U.S. was probably involved since the president just got involved like 2 days ago.
It's like, hey, here's what you guys are going to do, and here's what you're going to do.
Yeah.
We're done talking.
What do you think is the most important issue that people ought to pay attention to in the United States today?
I mean, apart from me?
Apart from you and your rise to power.
So you rise to power in 2024, overthrown in 2050, exiled the Martian colony 2051, return 2275, try to kill Captain Kirk, you know.
That's the whole thing, yeah.
You know, just the usual stuff.
I've heard this for years.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. No, I mean, no, for me, the big thing is it's our financial health. It's just two things. Number one, it's our financial health and getting our debt under control. But number two, the only way we're going to grow our economy is, I don't necessarily believe in income inequality, but I believe, I mean, are there, you know, is there very, you know, very wealthy and very poor, probably wider than it's ever been, yeah. But if you look at the skill set of the people who are very, very poor, I mean, the fact that here in the state of Indiana, on any given day on the state's website, there are like 90,000 jobs listed and 35,000 people looking for work. It's like homeless people sleeping in front of an abandoned building.
Yeah.
And so I think if we really focus on closing that skills gap and getting people the skills that they need, that's what will turn our economy around. Because people who are employed, but if you're a tool and die maker in northern Indiana, you can make easily 65, 70 grand a year. But if you don't have the skill set to do it, that job does you
no good at all.
No good. So we got to figure out a way, you know, here's what we need. Here are the people who have the skills and just match those together and we'll grow this economy like crazy.
The hard part's figuring that out.
And it doesn't require, you know, sending people to a four-year school because college isn't for everybody. I teach it, and I see it every day.
Would it make more sense to subsidize apprenticeships?
I believe everybody should have a post-secondary education, not necessarily college. So if you get your certification through an apprenticeship, I have no problem with that whatsoever.
In order, though, to do that, don't you have to... I mean, you're asking the business to take on an additional cost. So if you were able to do it where you gave them either a tax credit or a direct subsidy...
Because all we're doing is... See, because this is where I kind of split with my libertarian friends. Well, you shouldn't spend money on the business. You should do it yourself, blah, blah, blah. Like, you know what? It's called an investment. You know, why am I spending this much money today? Why do you get your oil changed so I don't have an engine problem tomorrow? And so you know what? The couple of grand that I'll probably spend to get this person his apprenticeship skills, I just made a lifelong taxpayer.
Yeah.
Which is the whole key. If you're ever going to pay the debt back.
Yep.
Because we don't have the United States doesn't have the Greek option of not paying it back.
Well, actually, yes, we do. Because actually, the biggest hold of our debt is us.
Yeah, the Federal Reserve, yeah.
Yeah.
But...
And no, I do not believe you want to audit the Fed. Fine, if that's what makes you happy.
way to reach the audience right at the core and draw them in.
Damn thing's been around for 100 years. It's not going anywhere. Sorry.
All right. So the final segment, the final part of our show was made for you. Okay, this is a little open forum where we talk about whatever a point we may not have been able to get to, a topic that we might have wanted to address, or just pure shameless self-promotion.
Actually, I'm going to surprise you.
Okay.
And tell you that there's probably no greater opportunity for libertarians to make progress in this country as a political party than any other time in human history. Because the largest bloc of voters, according to Gallup, is now independents.
Mm-hmm.
At 43%, Democrats are second, Republicans are third. And if libertarians can figure out a way to talk to people who are fiscally conservative, socially moderate, they will win every single time.
Yep.
With a simple thing, and you might remember the column I wrote. I said I was going to run for office on the do-nothing platform. I'm going to do nothing to raise your taxes, do nothing to increase government in your life. I'm going to do absolutely nothing.
That's why we love Calvin Coolidge.
And then you get a Great Depression because he did nothing. You're like, you may want to kind of rope those guys in. I believe government should act like a referee. You know, you call the ball, call the strikes, you know, call the offsides. What's that, holding or whatever, 5-yard penalty? I'm getting better at that.
Yeah, look at you sporting.
Yeah. I mean, that's what the government should do. I mean, do you get involved in the game? No, but you do have to go in and break up fights, and sometimes you got to put somebody in a penalty box.
Yeah.
And as long as you do that, then just let the free market nature run its course. Because I believe the best thing you can do for a healthy economy is free markets and economic opportunity do wonders for people. Because a guy with a job doesn't have time to go break in my house.
Very true.
Now, where can the people find you if they want to follow you? If they want to get in touch with you?
Usually I'm at Nikki Blaine's about 4 o'clock. 2 hours before the show. You can follow me on Facebook. I'm maxed out on friends, but you can still
follow
me.
So we have 2 maxed out friends, guys.
Mm-hmm. One table.
This is amazing.
Yep.
Kind of scary. Actually, a Spango introduced me to Facebook. Like, what's this? Like, this is social media. Like, what do you do with this crap?
Wait a second. I can promote myself?
Yeah. I was an early adopter. I'm like number 19 million on Facebook. So as soon as it got to IUPUI 10, 11 years ago, I was on it. I was hooked immediately. Love it. And introduced Abdul to it, and we used it to really help promote the show. And 04 to 08, I mean, that was really the way that the radio show and the radio station were promoted. And
yeah,
how
because
we
nobody was spending any advertising money.
That's for fucking sure. I got a story to tell you off air. But
yeah, you can also find me on Twitter, ATTY Abdul, Attorney Abdul. IndyPolitics.org is my political web blog, WIBC Radio. Matter of fact, just Google Abdul Hakim Shabazz.
Yeah, and if you can't remember that, then check out our Facebook page, and we'll link him and tag him and all that good stuff. Gregory, your final thoughts.
Well, Abdul, thanks for coming on, and it was nice to get to meet you and hang out in person.
So next time I got to do it while I'm back to drinking again. Damn Atkins. Yeah. Got 5 more pounds to lose. Ugh.
Is there? Well, you can have, like, scotch.
Yeah.
We'll remember that next time if you're still on Atkins.
Yes, we do. No, but the problem is if I drink scotch, I get hungry.
Uh-huh.
And when I get hungry, I eat really bad.
Right.
That's when I want my cheeseburger and my onion rings.
Yes.
We got to soak it up.
Yeah, exactly. Well, no, but I got a big dinner party tomorrow night, so I'll make up for it.
Excellent.
Nice. Well, my last thing is I just want to get it correct on the Grease, on the Grexit. It looks like it's going to be a haircut, so they're going to offer some debt relief to the Greeks. But then Greece also is going to have to make some major reforms to pensions and labor rules. And the key, well, the little libertarian element of that is in 1997, Milton Friedman talked about the EU and optimum currency areas and a political and economic union. And what he noticed was the EU wasn't so much about for economic benefits for the actors involved. It was to stop the next war in Europe. It was designed to keep France and then reconstructed Germany from engaging in a war again by intertwining their economies to the point of there's no winning by destroying each other. And what ended up happening was when you're an independent country, there's no reason to willingly cede control unless there are enormous benefits. Because like in the United States, between state to state, the labor laws, relatively similar, slightly different. People move around, change jobs. They can go take a job in Alabama when the factory moves. Not in the EU. They do not want immigrants. If you even look at it with their old colonial ties, they don't want those people coming in and working in the factories.
No, we'll just go to them.
Exactly. Yeah, we'll take it to them. But so the point is that the fewer entities there are, the more it's forced down your throat, and you don't even get an option. Like in Greece, the head of the European Central Bank said, maybe we should just overthrow Spiras and install a technocratic government, which you might be in support of.
Depends on who's running the show. Oh, they tell you, like, order, too? You know
but
sir, is that your Death Star parked outside?
No, that's pragmatism.
Yeah.
But the point is, the elites, in a lot of times, don't respect that call for democracy. People like Abdul, not necessarily saying that your voice should count unless it's well-informed.
It's not that I don't respect democracy. Democracy's great, except for the people.
If there was ever a way to remove that.
If I could just take care of the people part, democracy would be a wonderful thing.
No, and I get that sentiment. I look at the European Union and I think, you have a group of people say no, their politicians are going to say yes, and the elites who lend them the money are saying, to hell with your politicians and you guys, you're paying it back and here's how it's going to be.
You always have the option of not putting yourself in that position in the first place.
Excellent point. And so you had bad leaders, and that was the result of the people choosing bad leaders.
Yeah, because you know what? If you guys don't want to give up your retirement at 55 and your three-month-long vacation... As my grandmother used to say, the only problem with heaven is everybody wants to go, but nobody wants to die to get there.
Yep, that is exactly it. But yeah, that was all I was going to add, because I just found it so funny that Milton Friedman called it out in 1997 about how this ends, and no one probably paid attention to him whatsoever.
Of course.
Yeah, but also the thing you got to remember, too, about Europe is the longest peace those people have ever had was 150 years of the Roman Empire.
Right.
Civis Romanus.
Yeah, Pax Romana.
I'm a Roman citizen?
No.
Pax That's Romana. Roman peace. Yeah. Yeah. Civis yeah, Roman. Yeah. I'm a Roman citizen.
No. Romos Deus Dei Gaudios. Says Romans go home. No, it doesn't.
if you just friend Abdul, follow him, and start posting Monty Python memes,
he says Romans go home. No, it doesn't. But Romans go home is the most rewards.
All right, kids. Abdul, thank you. It was wonderful having you in my home, and it has been much less mocking than I anticipated.
Yeah, three black cats in here.
No, I just have two cats. It's always race with you.
No, it's your show. I'm not going to beat you up on your own radio program.
But I wanted you to. You missed an opportunity. No, well, it's okay.
That's okay. I know Bob and Tom number and chick. We'll take care of that.
Oh, God.
Yeah, he's not going to do it when you have some control over whether or not it gets heard.
You still got the edit. I taught you how to edit, kid.
It's true. All right, well, thank you for joining us on this episode of We Are Libertarians. We love you all. Please share this episode. Share all our past episodes. The only way that we grow is through you sharing this on Facebook, Twitter, and hell, why not? Google Plus as well. All right, thanks.
That's still around?
Yeah, I know. Can you believe it? Google is making us love it. Although they are de-emphasizing it because nobody uses it.
Because it sucks.
So this has been a wonderful episode of We Are Libertarians with Abdul Hakim Shabazz. But we're always out for more growth. So as always, we promise
to do better next time.
Bye-bye.
Music for We Are Libertarians is provided by Hoosier musician Brian Keith Wallen. Please check out his website, briankeithwallen.com. The song is Bad Spell.